Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. Why do we get emotional in a spiritual setting, you mean? It's beautiful. Emotion, there's nothing wrong with emotions. I have a very, very deep faith in God. And I have a very deep faith in the perfection of God. Yeah, we make a lot of mess down here. But that which God has given us, including tears, including emotions, including love, I don't think there's anything wrong with any of it. If God had wanted us not to have emotions, we would have been created without emotions. God is perfect. We didn't have to have emotions. We didn't have to have tears. Letting go of emotions sounds very nice. It doesn't actually work. And the reason is the letting go is in my brain. The emotions come out of nowhere. Before my brain is able to even have the concept of, oh, I should let go of this emotion, the emotion's already there. So what I would say is, rather than thinking about letting go of emotions, because emotions are, first of all, they're very beautiful, I think. Second of all, they are very telling about our path and about the work we need to do. Every time I get angry, it's a signal to me of work I need to do. Every time I feel hurt, sad, I feel despair, it's a signal to me. It's a signal to me about me. Emotions are pathways that we can literally ride into ourselves, into awareness of ourselves, which ultimately is the point. What we let go of is our attachment to the world operating in such a way that I don't get emotional. So I'm angry. Therefore, you need to act in a certain way, speak in a certain way, live in a certain way, so I don't get angry. Well, I need to let go of that. Your life choices make me very upset. They make me very worried. I need to let go of that. Not the emotion. What I need to let go of is the thought, the attachment, the expectation that you are going to live according to what I want. The emotion is just my reaction to when you don't do it. The emotion is the signal that something is awry in me, in my interaction with the world. What I need to let go of is an expectation that the world is going to behave in such a way that I don't get emotional. Don't do that or you're going to make me angry. I need to let go of that. Pure emotion opens our heart, especially the emotion that we have in spiritual religious places. We weep. We feel joy. Remember, joy is also an emotion. Bliss is an emotion. You don't want to let go of those. What you let go of is the attachment that I should always be joyful. Because if I'm attached to always being joyful, then I'm pushing away things that aren't going to make me joyful. People in my life, situations in my life. And pushing away creates problems on my spiritual path. The grabbing and the pushing both. And so let go of attachment and expectation, but allow pure emotion to be there. It opens you. When tears come, cry them. But don't get into the drama. Because a lot of times what happens with emotions is we get into drama. I'm angry. I'm worried. I'm sad. And instead of allowing myself to just feel that pure emotion, I get into the whole drama. I can't believe I married this person. I can't believe I agreed to do this job. I can't believe I had these kids. I can't believe we built this house. I can't believe it, whatever it may be. Can't believe I ate that cake. And we get into a drama. From tomorrow, I'm going to tell them, you know, I'm going to put them in their place. From tomorrow, I'm going to tell them they can't. A whole drama. How dare they treat me like this? Don't they know? The drama takes us out of the moment. Whatever is there in the moment is what's real. If it's tears, if it's fear, if it's rage, if it's joy, if it's love, whatever it may be, in that moment, don't try to push anything away. But the thing with emotion is it changes very, very quickly. If you don't hook into the drama, if you don't start writing a script around it, if we don't start connecting it to the story from the past, yeah, he always does this. My God, for 15 years I've been telling him, I really shouldn't have married this guy. Really shouldn't have accepted this job, shouldn't have moved to this area of town, shouldn't have had these kids. 10, 15 years, I've been doing this, it always happens, they're never going to change. What this does is, A, it pulls me out of pure emotion and into my brain, from where almost nothing good arises on a spiritual level. The brain is very good at all sorts of other things, but not our spiritual path. So it pulls me out of my heart and into my brain. It pulls me out of the moment and into every other moment. All the moments of the past, all the moments of in the future where they're going to keep doing it. My life is over. And it actually has pulled me out of truth. Because the truth of that very moment was sadness. But if I simply sit with sadness, what you find is it actually tends to change. Sometimes it changes into anger. Sometimes it changes into fear. Sometimes it changes into joy. You know, this is, it's most noticeable when you've lost a loved one. Because the primary emotion, of course, is sadness. Great, great, great sadness. And then, of course, everybody says, get over it, let it go. No. But stay with it as pure emotion. So, there you are in sadness. But if you don't hook into the drama of your story, what you'll find is that sadness is a wave. And then there may be anger. Because, yeah, that happens when people we love leave us. But then the next wave is a wave of joy because into the flash of consciousness has come the presence of that being. Who's still there? Their body has died. The body is gone, but the soul is there. And the joy is there of being in the presence of that other being. And then there's a wave maybe of laughter. You remember a moment. And then it goes back into sadness. That moment won't come again. And if I'm really honest with emotion, it keeps changing, keeps changing, keeps changing. And this is really what meditation gives us, is the ability to simply be present, not to latch into any of it. So I'd say, don't try to let go of emotion, let go of the drama, let go of the story, let go of the intellectualization of it, let go of expecting the world to act in a such a way so that you don't have an emotion. But when it comes, and specifically, especially when it comes in spiritual environments, swim in it. It cracks you open. That's God's tool to get you beyond the thinking brain. Because sadly, most of us sit in arati, sit in meditation, sit in satsang, sit in puja, and we're making shopping lists. We've come thousands of miles to like the holiest place in the world. We're on the banks of Ganga, but our minds are still somewhere else. So we're not even having the depth of the experience that is possible. And when you burst into tears, you're no longer making a shopping list. It's God's way of literally cracking you open. When you're overcome with emotion, it's God's way of saying, for God's sakes, be here. I'm going to pull you out of your mind. I'm going to pull you straight into your heart, straight into the moment. And that's a gift. So swim in that. Don't attach yourself to it. It may dissipate. When it dissipates into something, be present with that. But when this comes, just allow it to literally drown you. Because when you allow it to drown you, it'll change you. And then even when the emotion dissipates, whether it's minutes later, hours later, or days later, you will have been changed by it. And ultimately, that's why we come to spiritual places.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single...
Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga. In the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga.
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Elia, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me. Even though there is nothing lacking in my life, Why are we so restless? Why is there no stillness? How should we live our lives in our retired stage of life? Well, this actually pertains to everybody. Because the lack of ease, the lack of stillness, interestingly, it's not due to what we do. A lot of people think, well, if I could just do less, I'd be still, I'd be calm. And what you find is, actually that which keeps you from being calm is not what you do, but it's what happens in your mind. So it's how you think about what you're doing or what else you're thinking about while you're doing something else. But it's the workings of the mind that keep you from being still. The lack of ease, the restlessness, is a product of the mind. It's not a product of my career. And when I retire, then I can sit on the porch and sit on the swing and drink lemonade, and then I'll be calm. When I can just stop getting up every day and going to work, then I won't be restless. No, sadly. Because the restlessness is in your mind. And you carry that with you wherever you go. You know, my academic background is psychology, and even though it's been decades since I've been in school, I love psychology. And I love particularly psychological studies that tell us so much about ourselves. And one of the pieces of information that I love is that married couples, or even unmarried couples, but couples, tend to fight a lot more on vacation than normally. Well, this is exactly the opposite of what we would think. You'd think, well, we fight because there's stress, there's tension. And so when we just can finally get to, you know, the Bahamas, or when we can finally get skiing, or then it'll all be okay. In that cabin in the woods, it's all going to be okay. But actually what it turns out is that all that empty space, all that time, without things to actually keep us busy, like grocery shopping and taking the kids to school or going to work, if we haven't solved the issues of our mind or the issues of our relationship, they grow like, you know, has anybody seen Little Shop of Horrors? You know, they grow it, the little garden literally becomes Little Shop of Horrors in our minds, in our relationships. And this is the same thing whether it's a relationship with another person or a relationship with yourself. Do not think that suddenly by retiring, your stress is going to go away. Unless, should you be one of those people for whom the only cause of stress is not having enough money to put food on the table, not having enough money to send your children to school, not having enough money to buy sweaters for the winter. Well, if you've got a good pension, okay, maybe that would help you out. But for all the rest of us, all the tension, all the stress, all the restlessness, it's the games that the mind plays. In psychology, we call the everything will be okay in the Bahamas, we call it pulling a location. That's the term, pulling a location. If I just go there, everything will be okay. If I just leave here, everything will be okay. And you take yourself with you. So similarly in retirement, when you retire, you're going to still be there. And so regardless of what age you are, whether you're in school, whether you're working, whether you're retiring, this is the time to work on your mind. It will make your job feel as nice as retirement, It will make going to school feel as nice as retirement. Because again, it's not the study, it's not the job that actually is that which causes the stress. It's how we think about it. Or how who we are is interacting with it, with the work itself, with the people for whom we work, or who work for us, or with whom we work. But it's all taking place in our minds. And so why not start now? If you're already retired, well, the good thing is at least you've got a lot of time. But even if you're not retired yet, you're in school, you're working, whatever time you have. And the good thing about working on your mind is you can do it anywhere. You can do it sitting on a subway. You can do it stuck in traffic. You can do it in a boardroom. You can do it washing dishes. You can do it anytime. That which makes us restless is an internal sense of things should be different than they are. That's the restlessness. And if I think I know what to do to make things better, I'm going to run around doing it. Whether it's addictions in my life, if I just drink this or take this or eat that, I'm going to feel better. Whether it's if I had enough money, it would be better, so I'm going to run around. Whether it's relationships, whatever it may be, I'm going to run around trying to solve that sense within me that things should be different. But nothing I do ever solves it. As those of us who have lived long enough to run around enough already know. Those of you who haven't yet lived long enough, take it from us. It doesn't work. There is nowhere you can run, nothing you can earn or achieve that's actually going to bring that stillness in your mind, that's actually going to make it all okay in your mind. And this is where the spiritual practice is one that emphasizes who you are, not how much you make, not what you do for a job, not what area of town your house is in, not who you're married to or who your children are, but who you are at the core. Not the clothes you wear, not the jewelry you wear, not the car you're driving in, but the core of who you are at this very moment with exactly everything you have, everything that's happened, this moment, you are enough. This moment, you are full. This moment, you are exactly right. And that's what our spirituality teaches us. And that doesn't mean, therefore, in this moment, you should be ecstatic. This may be a moment of sadness for you. You may have just lost a loved one. Something may have just happened. Knowing that you are right, you are enough, you are divine, doesn't mean I don't get sad. It doesn't mean everything is perfect. Knowing that this situation is exactly right for this moment doesn't mean that I'm going to convince myself it feels great. What it means is that I'm going to stop telling myself that the answer is in changing the situation. That if I just could do this, make this happen, earn that, achieve this, go, if I could just do that, then I would be okay. It's that voice in our mind that spirituality stops. And again, it doesn't mean that we don't try to change things. We do. You heard Pooja Swamiji speak on the banks of Ganga. Those of you who know the work we do, know the work we do. Morning till night, trying to make things better. Whether through education, whether through programs for women, whether through environment, water, sanitation, hygiene, medical care, whatever it is. But there isn't a sense of restlessness inside of, until I can get that medical camp running, I'm not okay. Until I can get this happening, I'm not okay. It's not a restlessness that says, until this, until that, until I can, until I am, until I go. And that's the restlessness that stays with most of us for most of our lives, even in retirement. If I just could play golf better, if this lemonade were sweeter, if my porch were a nicer place to sit, if my children would just get married, for God's sakes, if my children would just settle down and get a job, if my children would stop working so much, if my children would have children, if my children's children would stop working so much, whatever it may be. As long as we have a pattern of thinking in our minds, a pattern of restlessness, that's going to stay with you whether you're sipping lemonade on a porch or you're sitting in a boardroom or you're sitting in front of a computer or you're performing a bypass operation as a surgeon. Wherever you are, if that's the way that your mind works, that's the way it's going to work. And so whether it's retirement or whether it's young age, this is the time. Work on the mind. Work on the mind. How can I feel right here, right now, in this moment? Enough? Okay? Right? Both in myself as well as in my surroundings? And then the earlier in life you learn it, the longer it's going to benefit you. But if you've already retired, don't worry. As Pooja Swamiji says, whenever you wake up, it's morning.
This is OTRFM, part of the iOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Join us here on the holy banks of Mother Ganga, in the lap of the towering and beautiful Himalayas, for our annual International Yoga Festival, taking place from March 1st to March 7th every year. Come join your global yoga family in a true union of yourself with your divine self. We look forward to welcoming you all. You can go to the website on www.internationalyogafestival.org. Look forward to welcoming you all home to the banks of Mother Ganga.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. is it possible to bring about a fundamental change in our behavior at the core of who we are, a fundamental change? And if so, what's the quickest and easiest way? I'm going to give you two paths, two different ways. And it depends on how core the behavior is. Some of our behavior is there just by habit. You have a poor association with someone in school who teaches you how to smoke cigarettes. 30 years later, you're still smoking cigarettes. Not a core issue in your psychology. It was just a poor association in school that now has run an addiction of, you know, a chemical addiction in your mind and your brain. One type of behavior. Another type of behavior. People who beat, or even if not horribly beat, hit a little bit, slap, hit people, their family, usually their spouses, their children. Okay. Other end of the spectrum. It's not a belief, I mean, it's not a behavior that I picked up on the playground. It's not a behavior I picked up because somebody next to me in school was doing it. It's a behavior that chances are I picked up because it was what was happening in my house when I was a kid. And so there's no way I'm going to be able to stop that behavior until I go in and understand why I'm doing it. And everything in between. So I'm going to give you both ways quickly. One is the behavior that doesn't have a deep, deep emotional core component that really is just a habit. You crack your knuckles. You bite your fingernails. You twirl your hair. Whatever it may be. Behaviors. Habits. Quickest and best way is literally to set up a system of rewards and punishments with yourself. Interestingly, punishments are much more effective than rewards. And so one way, I mean, you can choose your thing, but one thing that they do commonly, depending on how serious the behavior is, get a rubber band, tight rubber band, stick it on your wrist. Every single time you do it, bite your fingernail, crack your knuckle, twirl your hair, smoke a cigarette, pull the rubber band, and it's going to slap back on your wrist, and it hurts. It doesn't hurt enough that you're abusing yourself, but it hurts enough that it's creating a new pathway in your brain that says, biting nails, pain. Cracking knuckles, pain. Twirling hair, pain. Simple, easy, no psychologist required. It doesn't have to be the rubber band. It could be anything. But what's important is it has to be immediate. It's not when I get home later. In order for it to work in the brain, it has to be immediate. So you could walk around with a bottle of ice water, and every time you do it, you could pour the bottle of ice water on your head. You could actually have fun coming up with how you're going to torture yourself in a relatively harmless way to stop the behavior. But then we have other behaviors that come not out of just, I started doing it, now it's become a physical habit or an addiction, but actually something that runs much more core into the sense of who I am. I lie. I hit people. I hurt myself. I keep getting in abusive relationships, one after another. Whatever it is. That's the stuff that unfortunately a rubber band isn't going to work very well. You could still do it, but there's something within you that is stronger than the aversion to pain on your wrist that is pushing you to do it. And in these cases, what it tends to be usually is patterns from our childhood. We got messages when we were young. We learned things when we were young. whether we learned about how families work, how men treat their wives, how wives treat their husbands, how parents treat their children. The vast majority of people who beat their children were beat as children. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that. Not just because it was a habit. Not just because, you know, my mom uses double salt, so I grew up cooking using double salt. But because actually the core of who I am growing up, there was no teaching of how we solve problems. There was no teaching that we learned of how do I deal with anger when I feel angry. Nobody ever taught me how to deal with it. All of the modeling I got was when mom's angry, she beats us. When dad's angry, he beats us. Or they beat each other. So that was really what I learned on a core level, is the way to deal with your emotions is you take it out on other people. Or drink alcohol, take drugs. Whenever mom was upset, she got drunk. Whenever mom was upset, she took drugs. So it's behaviors we learned, yes, but we learned them on a very, very deep core level. And so in order to change that, we have to actually go within and change the belief that leads to the behavior. So in that particular case, the belief is the way to deal with my emotions is to numb them with alcohol or drugs. Or the way to deal with my emotions is to take them out on other people. But if I were going to go deeper, should I be interested in going deeper in myself, I would go even a little bit deeper and I would say, well, actually what that also means is I don't have the capacity to sit with my anger. I must do something about my anger. See, every time mom got angry, she had to do something. Every time dad got angry, he had to do something. Beat someone, drink something, smoke something. Which means, at the core level, we as human beings are not strong enough, spacious enough, conscious enough, grounded enough, anchored enough to have an emotion and not do something about it. If we had had an entirely different upbringing, if we had been modeled with someone who went, you know, came home and said, God, you know, sweetheart, do your homework for a little. I've got to go meditate because something happened and it made me so angry. And so I'm going to go sit and meditate for a while. Well, we'd learn to deal with our emotions in an entirely different way. So you have to change the belief that leads to the behavior. I get involved in abusive relationships one after the other after the other. Why? Well, because on some level I believe I am not worthy of being loved. I believe there's something wrong with me. If I didn't believe there wasn't something wrong with me, I would not keep entering into relationships where I was sure to be injured. So what is that belief? Why do I have that belief? Where did that come from? Whoever told me, verbally or non-verbally, that I didn't deserve to be loved? That I didn't deserve compassion? And only by identifying the source of that belief am I able to fully work to change it. But that doesn't mean you have to spend 20 years in, you know, Freudian psychoanalysis and go back to every day of your childhood or every aspect that you felt when things happened. It just means we have to know why we're behaving in a certain way. Otherwise, what happens is you come to the banks of Ganga or you go other places, it's New Year's, you take vows over and over again, resolutions. I'm not going to hit my loved ones anymore. I'm not going to drink alcohol anymore to numb myself. I'm not going to take drugs anymore. I'm not going to get involved with people who hurt me anymore. But you're making those decisions with your conscious mind. The conscious mind says no more alcohol, no more drugs, no more abusive relationships. with others or with myself. But it's the subconscious that holds the belief. And this is why you go into it anyway. And then this is why the conscious mind gets furious and says, my God, I just vowed. How did I find myself again in this situation? Because you haven't addressed the subconscious belief. And this is where it's important to go there. So the quickest way would be identify what belief is it that's making you do that. Identify where did that belief come from. Because the minute you can do that, usually we're also able to discredit it. If you're able to go back and realize, oh yeah, I believe it because of that situation. Well, with the eyes of an adult, we're able to understand circumstances. Children don't understand circumstances so much. And so that which happens, we take it in as truth, as law, as canon. As adults, we're able to look back and say, oh, well, yeah, of course my mom did this. Of course my dad did that. My God, what would I have done in their case? Look at what they were going through. Look at what they had learned from their parents. And so the belief that they gave us doesn't hold the power anymore. And so we're able to let it go. And then that's when you come here, the last part of your speed healing is you come here and offer that belief to Ganga. Ganga, I've got this belief. You didn't give it to me. God didn't give it to me. It came into my subconscious at some point that I don't deserve love. I don't deserve compassion. Take this belief from me. Take this belief. Let me really know the truth. And as you make that your path, then slowly, slowly the behavior will change as well, because you'll no longer need to act out the pattern.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation. It's not a matter of, oh, God didn't grace me. God's grace is always there. You have to be open to it. If the water tap is on but your bucket is turned upside down, it's no one's fault but your own that there's no water in your bucket. But you look at the empty bucket and you say, my God, I guess there was no grace. Well, no, there was grace. Look, the tap, it's pouring out of the tap. But your bucket is upside down. So you have to be open to it. And that openness requires courage, an open heart. It requires vulnerability in cases for us to realize we don't know everything. We can't control everything. We're not yet perfect. And, you know, we giggle, and yet on the spiritual path, it's interesting. It's this irony. People not on a spiritual path are very ready to admit, you know, to come forward and to say, you know, my God, do something about my ego, for God's sakes. It's killing me. It's killing my marriage. It's killing my kids. But as we embark on a spiritual path, there's almost this internal critic that feels like we should be a lot farther along than we are. And so to admit that I'm on the path and I've been on the path for years and I still get scared, I still get upset, I still feel unworthy. It's there's an entirely different sense of vulnerability with it. And so ironically, actually, that's needed even more on the path, is to be open to that, to realize, yeah, I still have this. Let me make sure my bucket's facing the right way so that, you know, the grace can flow. But circling back to I come out of meditation and there's this world of dichotomy. Well, remember where the teachings about this were given. In the Bhagavad Gita, this is where this teaching comes of a yogi, an enlightened one, is one who is the same, is balanced in all of these dichotomies. But where did he speak that? Not in a cave, not sitting on a porch drinking lemonade, retired. That was spoken on a battlefield. It was spoken in a situation where there were absolutely going to be winners and losers. There is no war that doesn't, I mean, everybody loses, of course, but at the end of the day, someone was going to be victorious. There were going to be winners and losers. There were going to be successes and failures. Some of the bows that Arjun shot were going to hit the mark. Some were not. So if he gives that teaching in a place in which success, failure, pleasure, and pain, yeah, getting hit by an arrow doesn't feel so good. Losing your family doesn't feel so good. There was sure to be pleasure and pain. There was sure to be success and failure, winners and losers, losses and gains. But if he gave that teaching there, it means it's for that world. It's not for the world of, well, as long as you can just keep sitting and meditating, or if God's grace is really upon you, there won't be success or failure. There won't be gains or loss. It's all just going to be, no. If that were his point, he would have given that sermon, you know, on a beach in Hawaii, on a vacation, in a cabin in the mountains where we were just meditating. But he gave it in a battlefield for all of us to know. Well, if that's the truth for Arjun, who literally has to stand there and kill his family, the stuff that most of us face in life isn't quite that bad. I mean, we all face a lot of things, not to minimize what any of us goes through, but very few of us have actually been forced to kill our family members. To kill our gurus, right? I mean, can you imagine? What could be worse? And if that teaching is for that spot, I feel like, in a way, we were given the worst possible situation so that no one at any time would ever be able to say, well, you know, I mean, my situation is so much worse than that, that he couldn't possibly have meant for me to stay stable. He created a situation that compared to which none of us is going to say, well, you know, couldn't apply to me. If that's the teaching for here you are on a battlefield, having to kill your own family, about to get your other part of your family killed by other members of your family, so both sides as family, those being killed, those doing the killing, if we're supposed to stay stable in that, well, then pretty much the stuff that most of us go through, again, not to minimize it on any level, but just to put it in perspective, we're supposed to also take the teaching in that. He didn't say to Arjun, Arjun said, forget it, I'm going to go meditate. He said, no. So it's not a teaching for just when you're in meditation. It's a teaching for when your eyes are open and you're in the world. Now, the last piece I want to mention on this, though, is he didn't say, O Arjun, thou shalt not notice whether there is success or failure. Thou shalt not notice whether there is pain or pleasure. Thou shalt become so dull that you have no idea whether someone's hugging and loving you or shooting an arrow into your back. He didn't say that. And it's important because it's not a teaching of disconnection. It's not a teaching of becoming dull, unimpacted, unaffected, unaware. It's a teaching of who you are is not going up and down with every win and every loss. Who you are is not going up and down in pain or in pleasure. Because that's how most of us live. It's pleasureful. It's a win. It's a success. I'm up. It's painful. It's a loss. I'm down. And so the teaching is no. You're not on the wave. You're deep in the ocean. Yes, the waves exist. It's not about get out of the ocean. It's not about sit this one out. It's about dive so deeply that you've connected to a you who isn't the up and down of the waves. And that's what we touch in our meditation, but then take with us as we stand up and we move through the world. Because yeah, the world is full of all that, as you've so rightly said. Whether God's grace is there or not. I mean, think about it. God's grace was there on the creation. And what did God give us? Winter, summer, night, day. Lots of dichotomies. Life, death. So clearly, the presence of grace does not bring about an absence of dichotomies. When you look at everything in nature, one animal's dinner is another animal's life. We as humans have learned, thankfully, how to, you know, grow agriculture and eat things that aren't causing harm. But if you look in the natural kingdom, one animal's dinner, at least in the, you know, the carnivore aspect of the animal kingdom, one animal's dinner is another animal's life. You know, you watch sometimes these National Geographics of lions running after zebra. And I find myself always rooting for the zebra. You know, you're like, run, run, he's behind you, run. And then the lion jumps on him and you think, oh God. But the truth is, if you could step back, you realize, well, what did the lion ever do to you? I mean, the lion's got to live. The lion doesn't eat grass. It's either the zebra or the lion. And on what level have you decided that the zebra somehow is more worthy of life than the lion? So these are the dichotomies that life gives us right there in one moment, life and death. With grace, because this is how it was created. And so clearly the dichotomies are meant to be there. But we as the experiencer, I mean, clearly at some point I should get to a point where I stop rooting for the zebra. Right? You know what I mean? Where you can watch something like that and just love the nature of how it all works without any aspect of inside you going, run, run, run. I'm not there yet. I always root for the zebra. Or whatever the animal may be, whatever the underdog animal may be. But ultimately it's all perfect. It's all grace. So the grace is not get me out of these dichotomies. The grace is allow me to be in them, but not be affected by them. I shouldn't go, oh, when the lion gets it. Right? So in the same way in our lives, things are going to go up and down. But as Pooja Swamiji says, but we don't go up and down with it. We stay stable. This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week, and I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.